This is Ham College, episode 120, for January 3rd, 2025. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM. Happy New Year from ICOM. This holiday season, let your passion for communication shine bright with ICOM's industry-leading ham radios. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
And I'm Dean Martin.
And we've got questions tonight from the amateur technician exam.
Again?
Yep.
Awesome.
There was more than one set of questions on there.
Yeah.
And
they've proven to be pretty tough.
They have. Tonight's, we're going to take it easy on you, though. I feel like you guys are already licensed, which is practically everyone in the chat room. And probably some others who watch this. These are easy, but there has been some tough ones.
That aren't licensed, though, which is the point.
Right. Well, that's who this episode is aimed at, but we'll take anybody who will watch.
Absolutely.
You know, some people will watch anything.
Well, like Glenn says, they didn't have anything better to do.
There you go. I see Glenn's not here tonight, so he must have...
Must found something better.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you.
These questions won't be too bad tonight, but they'll actually be some useful if you're studying for your technician exam. These are all essential things you'll want to know about tonight. Not just to pass your test, but so when you get on the air, you'll know how the procedure goes.
Yep.
What did we talk
about?
The protocol. What did we talk about last episode?
The best I remember, we talked about station identification. Maybe a little bit about repeaters. Maybe some third-party communications through in there, club stations, and then FCC inspections for good measure.
Tonight, we're going to talk about station operation, choosing an operating frequency, calling another station, test transmissions, band plans, calling frequencies, and repeater offsets.
Fun stuff.
Fun stuff, and, you know, things that you really need to know.
Yeah, so sometimes we, like, not sure why this is on here other than just to be having some stuff on the test, but this is really the stuff you need to operate.
Yes. You can't really do without knowing these things. Well, you can, but, you know.
You shouldn't. What is a common repeater frequency offset in the 2-meter band? A, plus or minus 5 megahertz.
B, plus or minus 600 kilohertz.
C, plus or minus 500 kilohertz.
Or D, plus or minus 1 megahertz. What is a common repeater frequency offset in the 2-meter band? Well, let's see. A, plus or minus 5 megahertz. We only have 4 megahertz of spectrum in the 2-meter band, so I don't think it's that
one. Chance that's not it.
Pretty good chance. So that leaves 600 kilohertz, 500 kilohertz, or 1 megahertz. I know the answer to this. And I could hem-haw around and talk about the others, but I'm just going to go straight for it.
Right for the throat, huh?
Yeah, plus or minus 600 kilohertz. Do you concur?
I do concur. I just happen to know that that's a fact.
The chat room, that's what we're getting in there, is B's. So let's see. And it is.
Here, I'll go ahead and give you that.
There you go.
Worked pretty hard on
you
that.
You owed me one from last time, I think.
Probably anyway. Did. Probably owed you a couple.
So... when we're talking about repeater offsets.
Yeah, what is that?
What is that? Well, what is a repeater? I think we've covered that this go around on technician exam. Maybe not. Maybe we have not talked about that. If I've got a walkie talkie here, or a handy talkie is what we call it, and Tommy has one, and I key up, he's going to be able to hear me when I talk on it.
We're on the same frequency.
You can hear me right now, and I'm not even using
it. I know, so we got a good connection, good signal.
So you could walk down to the end of the street, and we could still talk.
Yeah.
You could go further than that. I don't know. Depends on the terrain, on a flat, open area. We might be able to hear each other 2-3 miles apart, just talking on handy talkies, maybe further. Haven't really tried it. But suppose Tommy's farther away. He's 10, 15, 20 miles away from
me. Or maybe in my town over there where I live.
That's a good example right there.
6 miles-ish. Fine.
Although I suspect I could step out in the yard with a handy talkie and you could, and we might hear each other.
Maybe.
We'll have to try that one day. Anyway, point being, I might want to talk further than the 4, 5, or 6 miles I can talk with my handy talkie. I might want to talk to somebody 30, 40 more miles away using a handy talkie. Now, if I'm using my base station, I put a tower up. The higher I got it up, the farther I'm going to be able to talk and receive.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a problem. If my tower is, say, 50 feet, I can talk to somebody else with a 50-foot tower or higher or lower than that for, you know, number of miles away. And depending on the conditions, could be, I don't know, 40, 50 miles away under the right conditions.
Possible.
But I never do that with a handy talkie. That's when a repeater would come in handy, because a repeater is a receiver and a transmitter generally located on top of a building, on a mountain, on a tower that's higher and has better coverage than I would have on, a handy talkie or a mobile station, or maybe just a low antenna at the house. I could talk through that repeater and it'll repeat my transmission, and somebody further away, well, actually close as well, a much broader coverage area with my little penny whistle handy talkie or whatever.
How does that work?
Well, I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah, I thought you might be.
Yeah. So I'm repeating through the transmitter. It receives my signal and it rebroadcasts it out so that when anybody out there is listening, they're hearing what's coming from the repeater. They're not hearing my handy talkie. Well, they are indirectly, but they're not hearing it directly. And the way they do that, say if I was transmitting on 146 megahertz, the repeater would be listening on 146 megahertz. If it tried to retransmit my transmission on the same 146 megahertz, when it started transmitting, its receiver would immediately hear its own transmission, and it wouldn't hear my handy talkie because its own signal is so much stronger right there. Mm-hmm. So it just wouldn't work. And that's why we have an offset. We'll listen on one frequency and the repeater will transmit out on another frequency. In the case of the 2-meter band, what did we just say? 600 kilohertz away.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, and this is, don't use these frequencies because I didn't verify them, but say I transmit on 146 megahertz. If the repeater has a plus offset, it's going to rebroadcast my transmission at 146.6 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
A repeater could also have a negative offset. And in that case, it would be 600 kilohertz below 146 megahertz. But what it's doing is it's listening on one frequency and retransmitting on another so that you can make it happen. Otherwise, the repeater just hears itself and is just sitting there, and it's not useful. So that's why we even have an offset. The repeater consists mostly of a receiver, a transmitter, of course, an antenna, and a duplexer, which are some tuned cavities. What you're trying to do is make sure that the transmitter only transmit on the frequency it's supposed to, and you're nulling out all other frequencies either side of that. And the receiver will only hear station it's listening for on the handy talkie or whatever is transmitting. So it's actually two sets of filters. One is narrowing the transmit bandwidth of the repeater so that it won't be putting out spurs or transmissions out on the frequencies that you're listening on. And the receiver is listening only to the frequency that it wants to hear. It's got a null on the transmit frequency. Now, those are kind of, they take some adjustments. You can't just buy a set of duplexers and it works on every frequency. They have to be carefully tuned to the two frequencies you're working at. Transmit cavities tuned to the transmit frequency, receive cavities tuned to the receive frequency. So that's it. Receiver, transmitter, antenna, and the duplexers. And you can make the thing work. Now, it's an art tuning the duplexers. Mm-hmm. And you can't just grab an SWR meter. Well, you can, and just start tuning on it till you get like adjusting from VSWR, but it's not going to perform as well. It takes some specialized equipment. What is the national calling frequency for FM simplex operation in the 2 meter band? Is it A, 146.52 megahertz?
B, 145 megahertz?
C, 432.1 megahertz?
Or D, 446.0 megahertz? For the 2 meter band, so C and D are not it, because that is not 2 meter frequencies. Those are 70 centimeter frequencies. I just so happen to know that the call frequency for 2 meters is 146.52.
I'm going to have to agree with you.
Yeah, there's no way to reason it out other than just know it.
True. Yeah, there's no mathematical formula to it. That's just what it is. 146.52 megahertz.
All right,
there you go.
All right. So what is a call frequency?
What is the call frequency? That means if I just wanted to get on the air and start calling to see if I could get somebody to come back to me, I just wanted to talk. I could go to that frequency and put out a call there, and hopefully it's agreed upon that other people will be listening to it, and they'll hear me and return my call, and we can sit there and we could talk there, but best practice is you coordinate with somebody on 146.52 and you agree we'll move off to this other frequency to hold our cue, so thereby leaving 146.52 open for other people to use to make contact with.
If you're traveling too, that's a good one to listen to.
It is. A lot of people, that's what they listen to. Mm-hmm. If you're traveling through an area and you don't know the repeater frequencies, it's a great frequency to be listening on.
What is a common repeater frequency offset in the 70 centimeter band? That one is kind of related, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
A, plus or minus 5 megahertz.
B, plus or minus 600 kilohertz.
C, plus or minus 500 kilohertz.
Or D, plus or minus 1 megahertz. What is a common repeater frequency offset in the 70 centimeter band? Plus or minus 1 megahertz. I mean, that could work. Plus or minus 500 kilohertz. That would be a little closer together than they were for 2 meters. Plus or minus 600 kilohertz, that's what the 2 meter.
Well, that was 2 meters. Well, yeah. that might be right, huh?
It could be. I mean, you would think you could make that work. But in actuality, it is A, plus or minus 5 megahertz. Chat room, they're saying A. What are you saying?
Oh, I'm saying A also. I just happen to know that for 30-something years.
Yeah.
But.
And it is.
So you reckon why it is 5 megahertz and not the same as 2 meters, 600 kilohertz?
I'm also glad you asked that question.
I thought you might be.
This is a ARRL amateur radio band chart. It shows all the frequencies that we're allowed to transmit on for the different privilege levels we have. Technician can transmit all over 2 meters, all over 70 centimeters, which is 440 megahertz. So why 5 megahertz on the 70 centimeter band, but only 600 kilohertz on 2 meters? Well, 2 meters, we've got privileges from 144 megahertz to 148 megahertz. That means we've got 4 megahertz of bandwidth that's set aside for amateur radio use. You couldn't do 5 megahertz in there or anything really approaching that because you'll be running out the edge of the band. So they chose 600 kilohertz because you can electrically make that happen. It takes a little tuning. You know, you got to have good duplexers, but they can make that work. So we got 4 megahertz bandwidth on 2 meters. On 70 centimeters, we've got from 420 megahertz to 450, 30 megahertz of bandwidth. So we got room spread out there. So if we make our repeater offset 5 megahertz, we've got enough room there to do it. And there is an advantage to having them that far apart. And that is, your duplexers don't have to be quite as selective or quite as high quality as they do for 2 meters because the frequencies are, you know, more than 5 times farther away.
Duplexers.
So that it's cheaper, less expensive to make the duplexers. So why not? If you got the room to do it, why wouldn't you do that? They'll be easier to tune as well. So, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Put them farther away, and it's just easier to deal with.
The link to this will be in the show notes, too, by the way, so you can get a copy of it.
What is an appropriate way to call another station on a repeater if you know the other station's call sign? A, say break, break, then say the station's call sign.
B, say the station's call sign, then identify with your call sign.
C, say CQ 3 times, then the other station's call sign.
Or D, wait for the station to call CQ, then answer. You, first of all, if it's D, you might have a long wait. C, if you know the station's call sign, you don't want to be calling CQ because you already know it.
Yep. And B, you want to talk to one particular station.
Right. B, say the station's call sign, then identify with your call sign. Hey, that sounds like a good way to do it.
But if you said break, break, and then his call sign.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you should really do that.
Yeah.
I think you should go with B.
I'll agree. Just because
sure,
you said
and please it. Don't say breaker, breaker on there.
No. I'm going to say it's B. That's what everybody in the chat room is saying.
So that lets the station you know that you're trying to call them, and it also identifies you so they know who's calling.
And that's the order. So if I'm going to call you, I'm W5JDX, you're N5ZNO, so I'll say N5ZNO, W5JDX.
Yep.
And then that's who I'm calling, and it's me identifying. Some people will get that wrong. You'll hear it occasionally. Some people will
most
say their call sign.
It's
accidental, and it's new people. And,
most of it. It's not the end of the world.
But the traditional way to do it, you say the other station's call sign first.
Yeah.
Then yours. Okay. Oh, unless you look like Burt Reynolds. I guess Chip is saying you don't say breaker, breaker.
Oh.
Yeah, unless you identify as Burt Reynolds. There you go.
How should you respond to a station calling CQ? A, transmit CQ followed by the other station's call sign.
B, transmit your call sign followed by the other station's call sign.
C, transmit the other station's call sign followed by your call sign.
Or D, transmit a signal report followed by your call sign. How should you respond to a station calling CQ? You know, actually, it would be the same as if...
Pretty much same exchange,
yeah,
right?
Same exchange, yeah. You don't transmit CQ because you're not trying to find somebody to talk with. You've found somebody, or you found somebody looking to have a QSO or a conversation. So you don't need to transmit CQ. He did it. Transmit a signal report followed by your call sign. Well, you don't really need to give him a signal report. Transmit the other station's call sign followed by your call sign. If he's calling CQ and you're replying, that's it. And that's always when you're transmitting your call sign to the other guys, his call sign's always first, followed right. by you. So you're acknowledging him by saying his call sign, and then you're identifying or letting him know who you are by following it with your call sign. All right. I've got a tough one for you here.
Okay.
You probably know the answer to it, though. Which of the following is required when making on-the-air test transmissions? A, identify the transmitting station.
B, conduct tests only between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. local time.
C, notify the FCC of the transmissions.
Or D, all these choices are correct. And all these choices are not correct, so it's not D. You don't have to notify FCC of when you're testing your gear. So that's C is not correct either. And you can do it any time of the day, so B is not correct either. So I would go with A, identify the transmitting station.
And it is. Now, some of the misleading answers there, and I'll just talk about this, and I probably shouldn't. I probably should just leave it alone so I don't confuse anybody.
You mean like me?
Like anybody who's going to have to take this test. You've already taken it, so not necessarily you. But that answer B there, conduct test only between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. local time. That's not valid, but there is something similar that does apply to broadcast radio. There's a period called the experimental period that runs from midnight to local sunrise. And that's when broadcast stations can make test transmissions.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. So, say, and this just happens to be a reasonable case since I find myself in this position. I've got an AM station I maintain that is licensed to operate 50 kilowatts during the day. Mm-hmm. But at night, we have to switch to a three-tower directional array and drop the power to 500 watts so that we're concentrating all our signal in one direction. We're protecting all these other stations around, but we're allowed to transmit in this one direction that basically covers the city of license here. Because if we ran 50 kilowatts at night, you would be hearing us, you know, over half the U.S. probably, which we're not allowed to do that or licensed for that. So we have to reduce power at sunset. However, what if I need to test that 50 kilowatt transmission? When could I do that? Well, I shouldn't do it during the middle of the day while we got programming going and all such as that, because I may need to run some test tones or something, but I could do that after midnight. In other words, instead of running 500 watts pointed in one particular direction, if I need to, after midnight, I could crank it up to 50 kilowatts and do some test transmissions at high power. And that's just for broadcast, AM and broadcast. So nothing to do with amateur radio, but I think that's where they got that wrong answer from.
I didn't realize they had that.
Yeah, it's called the experimental period. And to notify the FCC of the transmissions. The FCC doesn't really want to keep up with everybody's test transmissions. So,
yeah. So if you're checking your SWR, don't tell them first.
They don't care. Yeah. you can go ahead and do it. What do you say we take a quick break?
Okay.
Come right back and do the other half of these questions.
That'll work.
Happy New Year from ICOM. This holiday season, let your passion for communication shine bright with ICOM's industry-leading ham radios. Celebrate the spirit of the season with reliable performance, cutting-edge technology, and the unmatched clarity that makes ICOM a gift worth giving. On the road, ICOM's handheld radios offer reliable performance, long battery life, and clear signal quality. Built tough for outdoor use and emergencies, ICOM keeps casual and serious operators connected wherever you go. The ID50A provides hours of VHF-UHF fun and enjoyment. Beginners will love the easy D-Star settings, band scope with waterfall display, voice messaging, and share picture function. The ID52A is the first dual-band handheld with a full-color 2.3-inch waterfall display. Conventional FM and D-Star simplex, repeater, regional, and worldwide calls over the D-Star Internet Gateway. The IC705 and IC7300 are the go-to rigs for outdoor hams who love POTA and SOTA activations. Both radios feature a large color touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall display for intuitive function and setting operation. The IC705 provides big radio features and performance in the palm of your hand. Enjoy HF to 50, 144, and 440 MHz with D-Star, SSB, CW, RIDI, AM, and FM modes. The IC7300 is an industry first to use RF direct sampling in an entry-level HF radio. This high-performance radio has class-leading RMDR and phase noise characteristics and a built-in automatic antenna tuner. The IC7300 will far exceed your expectations. The real HF fun starts here. Or upgrade your station to one of ICOM's premium HF radios. With the IC7610, faint signals are no longer challenging for DXers and contesters. Pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. This is the SDR every ham wants. The new IC7760 offers a modern connected system with a separate remote control head and RF deck linked via a standard LAN cable for more flexible installation. Place the RF deck closer to the antenna feed point, freeing up space on your desk. You can even connect the control head to the RF deck through your home network, enabling remote operations from anywhere your home without a PC. The ICPW2 is the perfect power addition to your base station. Take your contesting experience to the next level. The ICPW2 is a perfect, powerful addition to your base station. Take your contesting experience to the next level with ICOM's industry-first linear amplifier with included digital pre-distortion and a built-in 2x6 automatic antenna selector for single-operator to radio operation. For more information about ICOM's great amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur today.
What do you say we give away something?
Well, I found this really cool T-shirt over here. How about one of these?
That will work.
ICOM Ham Crew T-shirt.
Haven't you already given that away like 120 times?
Yeah, but let's give away some more. We got a bunch of them.
Okay.
What do you got to do to win it?
Well, it's pretty simple. All you got to do is use your computer or your phone or whatever device you have. You got to have an email address. And you send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv, and you're registered.
What do you got to put in the email?
Well, in the email, you don't have to put anything. You can, though. You know, we appreciate hearing from you if you'd like to put a message in there. So all you really got to do is have an email address and a name.
Yep.
And this guy right here not only has that, he also put a message in there.
Okay.
He said, "Great show, guys."
Awesome.
And who is that from?
Alan Hale?
Yep. WA9IRS.
IRS.
Yep.
All right. Congratulations, Alan.
Yeah. Congratulations, Alan. You'll be the next best dressed ham coming and going to the ham fest.
Yep, you'll look just as good when you leave there with all your stuff as you did when you got in.
There you go.
So you'll hear from Jesse and the guys at ICOM here pretty soon, and they'll get your information. Yep.
And by the way, Alan, you might want to think about renewing your license. It'll be due in March. So we look up folks on QRZ just to see where they are, you know, see if they've got any interesting information on there. And Tommy noticed that his license was expiring.
Yeah.
So you got a little while yet.
It's not expired. He's got a few months.
Got a few months. And you got a grace period after that as well.
Yeah.
But you can renew it. But I'm going to say that Alan is active because he sent us an email.
Absolutely.
Well, we got more questions to go here.
You might know this one. What is meant by repeater offset? A, the difference between the repeater's transmit and receive frequencies.
B, the repeater has a time delay to prevent interference.
C, the repeater station identification is done on a separate frequency.
Or D, the number of simultaneous transmit frequencies used by a repeater. What is meant by repeater offset? Well, we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What were we calling it then? Were we calling it offset? We actually were. So you probably won't have both of these questions on your exam, but you likely could have
at least
one
of them.
Yep.
More than likely.
What is meant by repeater offset? Well, since we've already talked about it, it's the difference between a repeater's transmit and receive frequencies. We discussed earlier why you would have different transmit and receive frequencies. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with A. I believe that's the answer right there. The chat room? Yeah, they're all saying A.
Haven't had any buzzers tonight.
Nope.
What's up with that?
I told you we weren't. Yesterday, I think I told you that. I don't think we'll have any tonight.
Well, there's always hope.
Well, there is, and you could redeem us right here.
Might happen.
With this next one. Oh, by the way, just more useless information. on the B there, they're saying the repeater has a time delay to prevent interference. Nah. Although some repeaters do have a time delay, and it's more frequent now that you'll run across one than you used to, and it's not much of a delay.
Really?
Just a slight little delay.
What's the purpose?
Well, in the strictly analog days, you'd have to do some extra work to put a delay in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not really typically an analog function, would be delaying transmission a little bit. But today, with the digital stuff, there's probably going to be a delay in there just by necessity because of the digital stuff. But there is a reason that you would want just a little delay in there.
And
you got any idea? It's a real good one real good reason. I don't know of any other reasons, but one good one.
Well, we're not censoring, so I don't know. That would be the only reason I would know you'd want to delay, but
no,
there's no sensor working.
Yeah.
These
don't delay that much, so it wouldn't even be useful for that. Look in the chat room and let's see. Yeah, Jeff says some of the digital stuff needs a delay, and that's correct. John says usually a small delay on ones with a tone too. People get cut off all the time when they start talking too quickly after keying up.
That's
a possibility there.
I've heard that quite a bit.
But the reason, and that's a good point there.
So the delay you're talking about is built in a feature, not just an artifact.
Correct.
Okay.
And they sold repeater controllers that had a built-in delay you could enable. And typically the reason you would do it, if you listen to a real old computer or repeater, you'll hear this. If somebody gets on there and punches their touch tones, mm-hmm. you'll hear them going through the repeater. as they punch them, you'll hear the tones go out. Well,
filter them
out. What if you were remotely controlling that repeater and you didn't want everybody to hear the sequence of tones you were sending? If you had a little delay, that would give the repeater time enough
to filter,
to mute the audio so that those DTMF tones don't get retransmitted.
That makes sense.
And it you know, kind of hides the control tones, or, you know, makes people not have to listen to somebody sending DTMF tones over a repeater. And, yeah, Jeff said the Kodak processing is not instantaneous.
Right. Now, I've heard that, but that's just kind of an artifact of the AD convergence stuff, D-Day and all that.
Yep. Tom says that's a new one on me. I guess what I said. Well, that was my thought on it anyway, is it prevents DTMF tones from
certainly possible. Yeah. I mean, how else would you do it? You'd have to have a way to detect them.
Yep.
And then just filter them out.
Well, and you got to have time to detect them. Mm-hmm. So if you got a little delay, you got time for a DTMF decoder to recognize that and to pick up your pen. What is meant by the procedural signal CQ? A, call on the quarter hour.
B, test transmission, no reply expected.
C, only the call station should transmit.
Or D, calling any station. Well, I think it's probably pretty clear to most everybody that's been watching the show so far that it's going to be calling any station. You typically call CQ if you're out there just wanting somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
Calling all stations. This is Tommy. I want to talk.
That works. I agree with you. Chat room.
You don't typically hear it a lot on the 2 meter, 70 centimeter stuff, but you do hear it some.
Oh, you will. Yeah,
you'll hear it some. I don't hear it a lot, though. But on HF, you hear it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on HF a lot.
Which of the following indicates that a station is listening on a repeater and looking for a contact? A CQ followed by the repeater's call sign?
B, the station's call sign followed by the word monitoring.
C, the repeater call sign followed by the station's call sign.
Or D, QSY followed by your call sign. Which of the following indicates that a station is listening on a repeater and looking for contact? All right. A, CQ followed by the repeater's call sign. Well, they could get on there and call CQ, and that could mean that you're looking to somebody to make a contact with. But you wouldn't use a repeater's call sign, so that'll rule that out. Otherwise, it's questionable if that could be the answer. D, QSY followed by your call sign. QSY means I'm changing frequency, so that's not it. I am correct on that, am I not?
You are.
Okay. C, the repeater's call sign followed by the station's call sign. Now, you don't really ever need to say the repeater's call sign, so that's not it. B, the station's call sign followed by the word monitoring. So if I heard somebody on there, say if I heard you and you said N5ZNO monitoring, I would know that you were listening on a repeater. And that you were kind of expecting to talk to somebody, maybe, you know. Yep. Or at least you're letting folks know that I'm listening if you want to talk. So I'm going to say B. What everybody's saying.
I say you're right.
There you go. What is a band plan beyond the privileges established by the FCC? We just had a band plan out here.
Still got one. If you want to get a copy of that, I'll have a link to it when I do the show notes.
Is it A, voluntary guideline for using different modes or activities within an amateur band?
B, a list of operating schedules.
C, a list of available net frequencies.
Or D, a plan devised by a club to indicate frequency band usage. Well, it's not devised by a club.
Well,
is it? Maybe it is, kind of.
Whose band plan have you got here?
ARRL's, but ICOM's also got one, too.
They do.
So somebody came up with it. Maybe, I don't know who actually came up with it. List of available net frequencies, it's not that. List of available operating schedules, it's not that. I was going to go with A, a voluntary guideline for using different modes or activities within an amateur band.
I'm going to agree with you.
But I could see how D could possibly get kind of confused with it as well. But it's A, I think.
Chat room's agreeing with you. Tom is saying it's the beyond the privileges established by the FCC thing that gets tricky. Because the band plan's not really giving you anywhere else any other frequencies you can talk on. The FCC has established that. The band plan is just voluntary guidelines for, okay,
So
we're going to do CW here.
Yeah. Phone in this part, data in this part.
Yep. And generally, everybody agrees on that, except on 80 meters or 75 meters in the AM section, which runs from, what is it, 3870 to 3890. Is that correct? I don't think it shows on the band plan, but that's agreed upon frequencies for AM transmissions. And you hear a lot of people talking sideband in that portion of the band, and that's, you know, that's not cool. The AM guys...
Well, in all fairness, it's not on the band plan. So how do you know?
It's a gentleman's agreement. You sure it's not on there anywhere?
I don't see AM listed anywhere.
It really should be in there. You know, that was one of Bob Hall's big sticking points there.
Oh, yeah?
Is that you shouldn't use sideband in the AM window there. It's just a little tiny slice that's agreed upon for AM operators to use.
It depends on who agreed upon it.
It was Hams.
Yeah, it's gentlemen's agreement, but some people might not know about it.
They only want that one little area to make AM contacts on. And you got the rest of the band for single sideband. Conversely, AM station is going to take up twice the bandwidth.
Yeah, I was about to say, I can see where that's a good thing, because otherwise you're going to just be splattering everybody, man.
So to do an AM transmission takes about twice the bandwidth. Also, a lot of those guys are running converted broadcast transmitters. So if they decide they want to talk on a frequency and flip it on, you're pretty much not going to talk there. it's going to use up a fair amount of spectrum, and a lot of times with a fair amount of power. So, you know, gentleman's agreement. If you can avoid those areas, and you can avoid them because there's plenty of room to talk otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Go somewhere else. Anyway, it's 3870 to 3900.
Okay.
And most folks will be on 3885. Out on the West Coast, they'll lean toward 3870, but over on the East Coast, they're really not around there.
What term describes an amateur station that is transmitting and receiving on the same frequency? A, full duplex.
B, diplex.
C, simplex.
Or D, multiplex.
Some kind of flex.
What term describes an amateur station that is transmitting and receiving on the same frequency? A, full duplex. It's not that. Full duplex means that you're listening and talking at the same time. You can't do that on a single frequency. Actually, no, you can't, but I'm just speculating here. DMR, where they got
two color codes?
Yeah. They're doing frequency division multiple. multiplex, and I wonder if they could do it there. Anyway, don't let's not go down that rabbit trail. I just confuse everybody. B, diplex. A diplexer generally is where you're combining two signals together. That's not it. D, multiplex. Multiplex would, that seems to indicate multiple. Well, we're talking about on a single frequency here. It's as simple as it could get. Simplex. C.
Simpleplex.
Yep. Although we did have some mixed answers in the chat room there. What describes an amateur station that is transmitting and receiving on the same frequency? If it's one frequency, it's got to be simplex. What should you do before calling CQ? A, listen first to be sure that no one else is using the frequency.
B, ask if the frequency is in use.
C, make sure you are authorized to use that frequency.
Or D, all these choices are correct. They all seem like good ideas. A, listen first to be sure that no one else is using that frequency. That's always a good idea. Always.
Yes. Yep.
It doesn't happen, it does happen a lot, but sometimes it doesn't. B, ask if the frequency is in use. That's a good idea, too, because you might catch somebody in the kitchen taking a breath or something.
Yeah.
C, make sure you're authorized to use that frequency. That's a good idea as well.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be talking on unauthorized frequencies. Or D, all these choices are correct. I'm going with D on this one.
Yeah, that's
they
what
are all correct. They're all great ideas to do, too.
Yep. That's what you're saying in the chat room. All these were things that we had learned before we became hams or around that time. And that's a good reason when you first get licensed or if you can get your hands on a scanner or a radio that can say, here 2 meters or something, listen for a little bit before you start talking.
Oh, yeah. That's always good advice as well.
Yeah. Then you'll figure out, well, what's this guy doing? Okay. Now I see he's saying his call sign after the other guy's call sign. Every time he does that, that must be the way to do it.
Right. So this is the technician questions that we're going over. And these 2 meters, 70 centimeters, that's the primary.
That's the most popular.
Yeah. So, and all this stuff that we've gone over tonight is stuff that you'll use pretty much on a daily basis if you're active at all. So it's all great stuff to know.
And a lot of it also applies to the HF frequencies for your general or extra class license as well.
Yeah, the exchanges do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's see, anything else we should say about any of that? It's, if you're not licensed yet, just study along with us. Or go out and buy a study guide. Take some online tests.
What study guide do you recommend?
Well, there's a couple of different ones that I recommend. There's actually three.
Yeah?
Three different ones I recommend. Couple of three. The first one is the Amateur Radio Technician Study Guide by Gordon West.
That's a good one.
WB6NOA. And it's available through the ARRL now.
Yeah.
It's on their website. This is the ARRL Technician Q&A. It's just questions and answers. And there'll be a little explanation in there on each one as to why that's the answer. Gordo's will go into a lot more detail, and it's organized differently in sections. It's a little different way to study. It's really been one of the more popular ones, this one.
Pretty intuitive ways his are laid out.
Those two have been the most popular forever. This is one that I think is fairly new. This is the Ham Radio License Manual. It's for a technician, and this is a spiral-bound book here. There's a lot more detail, a lot more information in here. Circuits, pictures, arrows, diagrams, charts. This, it's a little more expensive. $32.95 is the list price.
Good, that's a good reference to have. Even it's after excellent. After you've passed your test, good to have them.
This one's $19.95. I'm not sure the price on Gordo's because I don't have a current copy. But, yeah, if you're really serious, you're going to learn a lot if you got that one right there. But you can do it with this one.
You can get licensed with the small one.
Yeah. Yes. But
the other one's a good reference to have for other information.
You can go download the question pool and just study the questions and the answers. But, you know, it's nice to know a little bit about what you're doing. So, we recommend that. But either way, you know, actually, we're going to have to finish these technician questions by June the 30th of 2026.
Oh, we'll be okay. I think we'll be okay.
I think we will. Because that's when the current question pool expires. But we got some time yet.
Cool. All right.
If you want to get your ham radio license, by all means, welcome to the hobby. Do a little studying. Find someone giving the exam around. Go to the ARRL.org site. You can get some good information on there. That'll point you to different clubs and people around. A lot of resources out there. Yep. So,
if you're not a member of the ARRL, might think about that, too, if you got your ticket.
Yeah.
It's time for me to renew mine.
It's time for me to renew mine, too, or at least I got a letter saying it was, but I actually don't renew mine until the Hamfest every year. So I got a little while. But the Hamfest is coming up in Jackson. It's going to be
the last day of the month and the first day of the next month.
If you're in Mississippi or surrounding states, come on over. It's a good Hamfest.
We'll be there. 7:30, everybody. Good night.
7:30.